The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
Anyway, today we have a guest speaker, the next slide, who is the audience director for the Singapore MIT Community Lab. That's where we are. And he's going to run through brainstorming as an exercise. We're not actually planning out the game that you're going to be doing for your first assignment in this class. I didn't think of it. This is a gathering.
Yeah, these will just be practice.
So basically, the groups, there will be a group activity involved in this, but the things that you're working on don't have to be the same groups that you will eventually be using for your first assignment. The idea is just sort of to get used to the process of brainstorming and sort of a general rule of thumb, before I spoil the entire talk.
Yeah, that's okay. So, my name's Anik Stein, a little bit of background on myself. I'm the audio director here. I've been working in sound design officially for a number of years now, 5-some-odd years. Unofficially, way longer than that, doing TV and video game sound design. And then before that, I was a high school teacher. I think, to the extent that talking about kind of creative collaboration, I have a fair amount of experience, ranging even back to when I was teaching high school, for trying to encourage what we might call organized ideation. I guess first I'll thank you guys for reading the text. It is funny. It does have these kind of, I guess now a little antiquated, 1950s sort of references, and some of his scientific evidence for why brainstorming is good is not particularly well supported. He's like, we got 95 ideas. And I was like, well, how many ideas did you get? Doing it the other way doesn't tell you, but that's good. Hey, 95, that's a big number, So, a little bit of background about Alex Osborne. He was an advertising executive. And so you can kind of see where brainstorming and advertising is a creative industry, right? It's a design industry. And so getting multiple people in interdisciplinary kind of, different skills working together on a creative project, it can be a challenge. And so you can see how brainstorming came out of the work he was doing in advertising. So just to get started, I would say, you've read it so you have a sense, but kind of forget what you think you know brainstorming is. Some of what you think it is will apply. Some of the most fundamental principles to brainstorming, maybe you don't realize, or you didn't realize until you did the reading, and that's a little bit of what I want to talk about. I think the foundation for his brainstorming idea is actually really solid, and it's something that we should explore today. Why brainstorming for video game design is an interesting question, but I sort of touched on that a little bit with relation to advertising, right? I mean, we're talking about a creative industry where you've got people with various skill sets, whether they're artists or sound designers or game designers explicitly or producers, all of these people kind of existing in a collaborative environment together. They're bringing different things to the table. How do you get them to kind of work together and be collaboratively creative? And so this is, a first step in that process. This is why brainstorming is particularly useful for game design. And then the other thing that I think is important to understand, and we'll talk about it a bit more, is the kind of social pressures that are created in professional creative environments, even non-professional actually. I mean, it would exist in an educational environment too. You guys are all at MIT. It's one of the most prestigious universities in the world, right? And so you're probably no stranger to the idea of kind of social pressure in the process of ideation, right? You sit there and you say, if I say this idea, am I going to look like an idiot? Usually the outcome from that is, if I don't say anything, it's maybe I don't get the gain of presenting a good idea, but I don't get the hit of making a bad idea. And so it's like, self-preservation. It's like, why take the risk if it's not worth it? I think MIT is an interesting place to talk about brainstorming and this kind of organized ideation, because there is, social and academic pressure here, too. pressure to be right, pressure to not say something that would seem wrong, and that sort of pressure is completely antithetical to the idea of a brainstorming session. And so that's kind of a basis for why not only it's good for video games, but it's also good to talk about here at MIT. So there are four basic principles of brainstorming. You know, these were outlined by Alex Osborne. He was an ad agent, and I guess it was, you know, early, he says it was like 1938 when he first started using it. People started kind of talking about it since then, and it kind of, I like when he said it sort of spiraled out of control, that people sort of ran away with it. They're like, ah, this is a great idea, but then they were kind of practicing it wrong. And so, you know, in Applied Imaginations, which is where the text, you guys read, it's sort of him reflecting on this brainstorming idea and saying, this is really how it should be exercised. The first principle is single-handedly the most important principle, and that's no criticism. That's kind of a blanket way of saying it, but really, broad sense, it's kind of saying, judgment needs to be excluded. In some sense, it's kind of both positive and negative, but especially you don't want to criticize each other's work. You also don't want to spend time during a brainstorm session talking about how good an idea is, right? If someone throws out an idea and someone's like, oh, this is the best idea, we don't even need to keep going anymore, then it's like, whoa, no, wait, now we're not brainstorming anymore. And so really, judgment is absolutely supposed to be excluded from the process. I think that this is the primary principle that goes against that social pressure, right? Because the social pressure of judgment, the people who are saying whether you have an executive who's in charge of you, a boss who's saying whether or not the ideas are good or bad, or whether you have colleagues that are saying whether or not the ideas are good or bad, that sort of social pressure that forces people to stay quiet and maybe hold on to good ideas or throw away good ideas, if everybody's on board with the lack of criticism, then you kind of have more freedom to kind of express yourself. Just kind of pulling back to the text a little bit, there was this great quote from this vice president. I'll read to you guys again. He said, it was hard to get through my head what you were trying to do with us. My 15 years of conference after conference in my company have conditioned me against shooting wild. Almost all of us officers rate each other on the basis of judgment. We are far more apt to look up to the other fellow if he makes no mistakes than if he suggests lots of ideas. That's something that may sound familiar to you. So I've always kept myself from spouting any suggestions which could be sneered at. I wish our people would feel free to shoot ideas the way we have been doing in these brainstorm sessions. And so really, this lack of criticism, this sort of creating a safe environment for ideation, is the most fundamental principle in this brainstorm. And it really goes right at those social pressures which can stop, creativity and really hamper creativity. Any questions about that? That sort of makes sense, right? This principle of no criticism? Cool. Principle number two, freewheeling, as Mr. Osborne likes to call it, the wilder idea, the better. This is also hard to kind of get used to. Again, it was like the guy said in that quote, you resist the urge to throw out something that's absolutely crazy and absolutely wild for the fear of ridicule. Well, if we eliminate the fear of ridicule and we understand that we're just trying to get every idea that we can, then freewheeling is absolutely encouraged, and you need to kind of get past that, this would never work, or no one would ever like this. And I can, I put up Katamari Damacy up here because that's the sort of idea that someone throws out at a meeting, and if there's criticism, someone will be like, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You can't just roll around picking up stuff for the king of the cosmos. That's insane. And it probably was a synthesis of a lot of different ideas that kind of created that game, which we'll talk about later. But really, having these like kind of wild, crazy ideas, you may think it's over the edge, and it might be over the edge. But it is way easier to make something feasible than it is to take something that's pretty pretty normal and make it innovative and interesting, right? It's much easier to kind of go in that backward direction. And so. Really, the wilder the idea you can come up with, the stronger. Any questions about principle number two? Making sense? On board? Cool. Quantity. This is really the goal of a brainstorming session. Come up with as many ideas as you can, right? It stands to reason that if you have lots of ideas, there's a greater likelihood that you'll have a useful one than if, say, you have two. Your choices are limited. You're going to pick the better of the two, I suppose, but it might not be the best idea you have. And so really, this is, you know, this adds on to that wild idea. Throw everything out you can. You need to just get everything out and everything on the page in order to even be able to start judging it. And that's the important thing, too, that needs to be clarified, is that brainstorming is a first step in a creative process. It's not the whole process. It's not like, oh, we've got this creative problem that we need to solve. We'll have a brainstorming session, then we'll have it. And actually, that's something that hampers brainstorming a lot, is that you have the brainstorming session, you come up with these great ideas, and then everybody leaves, and you never return to it. Or you never kind of reflect on which of these ideas is going to be best, or you kind of just end up picking one. And so the judgment needs to happen as well, but not now. You know, during the brainstorm session, it's just get everything out that you can. It kind of stands to reason. And I kind of made fun of Alex Osborne when he was like, you know, saying, well, in this instance in the government, they had 95 ideas, and we, you know, came up with 8 new desires, which, you know, how many did you come up with before? But it's true. Just the more you have, the better you're going to do. Cool. And then this one is related to that, which is the idea of synthesis, or building on ideas, which is that oftentimes the best idea, the best creative idea, is not going to be something that's just kind of a unique idea that stands alone in this corpus of ideas that you've collected over the brainstorm. It's going to be an idea that is a synthesis of one idea and another. Or someone suggests an idea, and then that makes you think of something else that's related to it, and you kind of build on that. And you can see in really positive, good brainstorming sessions, there's a momentum. And one of the things that can really hurt that momentum is when people are starting to riff on an idea, then someone's like, oh, but, you know, in other news, you know, we could do this. And so it's really encouraged that you synthesize ideas. If you have that other left field idea, don't throw it away, right? Jot it down so that you can bring it up later, but don't kind of kill the momentum of the synthesis if that's happening. It's you know, kind of really important that you start, it's the collaborative part of this creative ideation. It's this combining of ideas that's going to create good ideas. And that's just, I think we can kind of take that as a given, that if you collect a bunch of skilled, thoughtful, creative people together, combining their ideas is going to create something that's better than just any one idea that one creative professional is going to have. Or at least just a different solution that might be more ideal given the problem. And so, you know, you can think of things like, you know, Lego's pretty awesome. Star Wars is also pretty awesome. but, you know, Lego Star Wars, is also awesome. You know, similarly, you know, Marvel's dope. Capcom's also pretty dope. Marvel vs. Capcom is tremendously dope. So, you know, building on ideas can create, obviously, really interesting things. And that's, you know, it's a good idea to kind of keep working on that in your brainstorm sessions. Like, what can you put together? So how is it organized? You know, we kind of talked about the basic principles. Any questions about those four principles? Do they all make sense? Do they all seem to be grounded in nothing? The greatest thing I've ever read? All right, cool. So the question becomes then, how do you organize your brainstorm? One of the points that Alex Osborne makes is that it needs to have a casual spirit or a casual atmosphere. He refers to it as a picnic, which is another one of those. I haven't been on a picnic in a really long time. But you know, it's like, yes, we brought our lunches in, and then we talked afterwards, and it's like, well, we call those lunch meetings now. But he has a good point that if a large part of the brainstorming session is intended to combat social pressures that stop you from being creative, that inhibit your creativity, then it would stand to reason that creating a casual spirit, a casual environment for this process is important. So having that, it's hard to, most video game processes and most video game companies have a pretty casual spirit and environment because of the nature of the work in general, so sometimes this might not be that hard, but you know, things to consider are like, what is the makeup of your team, right? If there's, you know, if your president of the company does a really bad job of putting himself or herself on the same level as all of the people, you might want to exclude that person from the brainstorming session, because then everybody's going to feel the pressure of the president, you know, and oh, do we need to make an idea that makes that person happy? you know, you have to think these things through in terms of what the environment is going to be for your brainstorming session and who's involved. So it is an important point, it is an important step. Starting with a bad or a worthless idea encourages that freewheeling sense. A lot of times people will contribute ideas that feel safe. Again, you want to come up with the most ideas that you can. Having someone with the courage or even bringing to the beginning of it a crazy, worthless, bad, freewheeling idea can help kind of encourage people to keep doing that. So either starting with someone who has a crazy idea or even bringing it to the brainstorm at the very beginning can be a really good thing as well. This is kind of a key one. Don't interrupt anyone. It's really important in a brainstorming session to encourage that every voice is heard. There's these kind of, let me see if I can find that quote from that one guy. Here we go. It's great.
Think up or shut up.
Oh, well, there's that one too, which is a good one, yeah. But talk about the spirit of a brainstorm session is important. Self-encouragement is needed almost as much as mutual encouragement. A perfectionism complex will throttle effort and abort ideas. He says, one of the ablest members kept mum throughout one of our sessions. I buttonholed him, never heard that expression, afterward and begged him to spout whatever ideas might come to his mind in our next meeting. This is where it gets good. This is the really able member of this ad team. He says, all right, I'll try, but here's what happened. After our first meeting, I jotted down about 15 ideas with the thought that I would bring them to our next session. But when I looked them over, I decided that they were worthless, so I just tore up the list. Alex kind of goes on to say it took a while to encourage this guy to understand that there's no such thing as a worthless idea, that it can either be expanded upon or revised, and that's kind of that synthesis thing, right? That having a wild idea and getting back to this idea of the interruption, nothing will stop a person from wanting to contribute if more than not being able to even have their voice be heard. Right? Like they're trying to say something, and then they just get cut out by somebody else who's like, oh, but this is better. Especially for a shy person or a person who's otherwise feeling like my ideas are worthless, they won't be able to get it out because they've then been cut short. So some of this responsibility falls on what we might call the leader, which I'll talk about later, of the group. But really, it's kind of a collective responsibility that everybody kind of makes sure that as someone is expressing an idea that it's maintained. Adding to that, keep the description of your idea short. If people are sitting here and it's like you've now hijacked the 30-minute brainstorming session with your one idea that took 5 minutes to explain, that can also hamper it, right? Part of it is not only don't interrupt people, but also make sure that when you are contributing, you are allowing for other people to contribute as well, something that maybe is not considered as much. For the organization, designate a leader. I hate that term, but that's what he used in the book. I tend to use the term clerk, which is kind of a Quaker idea, which I kind of grab onto. A clerk, being more of a facilitator than an actual leader. Leader suggests, boss, it's always not great for everyone's even sort of brainstorming session. And then, of course, the secretary, or as he calls it, an associate leader. This is someone who writes stuff down. There's some of that good old-fashioned hierarchy going on in this text. But obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about what the roles of these people are, but having those roles defined early is important. And then this is something to talk about a bit, explaining the process and the principal question at the start of the session. I don't know how many of you had heard of these four principles of brainstorming explicitly prior to reading this text? Anybody? Oh, well, I know, because you heard from me. The process is something that it needs to be clear, otherwise people won't remember to do it. You'll see when we do the exercise, it's even hard sometimes to curb your criticism. It's just, especially when you're comfortable with people, and you may not mean it in a malicious way, you may not mean it in a way to kind of, stop the brainstorming session, but you just be like, oh, that's nuts, and we're laughing and everybody's having a good time, and then you kind of like think back and like, wait, that was me passing judgment on an idea and possibly inhibiting the kind of ideation that we're trying to get across. So explaining the process at the beginning, regardless of the group, is really important. And that is usually a responsibility that falls on the leader or the secretary, whoever's organizing the session. They even suggest in the text, have it posted. Have the four principles up so that everybody can kind of remind themselves through the process what these four principles are. But explaining the process is really important. And then this is, I can't even this is so important. Having the principal question and the goal of the brainstorming session clear at the start. Obviously it's encouraging freewheeling, it's encouraging free thought, it's encouraging this all kind of, wide open creativity, and yet at the same time, if you do that in an unbounded sort of way, you might end up with things that really in the end, you don't have too many useful ideas, you've got useful ideas for something else, not for the actual creative problem that you have. So you take it from an ad concept, so you've got a vodka company that's like, oh, we need an advertisement for our, awesome vodka or whatever. And so you're like, all right, we're going to have a brainstorm session. And a bunch of people come up with ideas. And now you're selling dryers because it was wide open, right? And it's like, oh, we've got these great ad ideas for dryers, but they're just really, really not going to work for vodka. Bringing it back to a video game concept, you've got a contract with a producer to make a first-person shooter, and in your brainstorming session, you've designed a cool, cute platformer. Neat, but that's not where the money's coming from, right? So bounding the brainstorm session is important too, and you'll kind of see that in the exercises that we do today, how it's important to bound that. Yes. Oh, and write down everything. Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. This is an important point. This happens to all of us, but you have this great idea, and then you don't write it down, and then you go to bed, and then the next day you're like, oh, I had this great idea. Great idea. You can't remember it, right? And so writing down everything is absolutely essential. You'll never, you'd be amazed the number of times that, a week later you're like, oh, we could put these two ideas together as long as you can remember what those ideas were. And so what you think, it's hard to not mentally pass judgment on things during the brainstorm session. And what you think might be great now may a week later not be as great, and what you didn't think, will be. And so making sure to have everything written down is really important. And they even suggest, having two secretaries if you need, if you've got a large group or lots of ideas, and they're each writing every other one, can be helpful to make sure that you get everything, right? So that you get everything right. So, next is the question of what sort of problems are suitable to a brainstorming session. The great example that Alex Osborne gives is setting up a brainstorm session on whether or not to get married is not a particularly suitable question. That was sort of an interesting concept. He's like, well, to decide to get married, you apparently list the pros and cons. That's not exactly the process I went through before I got married. I was like, well, honey, I'm going to have to write this down. but fair enough, that was the suggestion that he came up with. And he has a good point, right? I mean, it's the question of whether or not to get married is a judgment call. It is not a creative ideation process. And so that's not a particularly useful kind of problem that's suitable to the brainstorming process. You want a problem that is going to be benefited by having a large selection, a large corpus of ideas. And so those are the kind of problems that are more useful. And you'll see when we do our example exercise what some of those might be. I also kind of put here that having a clear definition of the aim is really essential. It's sort of what we talked about before. You need to make sure that everybody understands and everybody's on the same page. Otherwise, you end up with stuff that might be useful for something else, but not useful for what you're particularly trying to do. And so making that clear for everybody is really important. Keeping the problem as simple as possible, is also really important. Trying to keep simple language for the problem. Keep it constrained in a way that is simple enough so that people can kind of work on it as opposed to just feeling limited by it, if that makes any sense. If something is overly complicated and overly constrained, then it becomes how do I fit everything into this? How do I match every single one of these things? If it's simpler, then it's a little bit easier to kind of work on and kind of be creative with. So keeping problems simple. Which isn't to say that complex problems couldn't be dealt with, but just divide them into sub-problems, right? Divide them into little sections. So there might be something like, how could we deal with the UI? How could it look in this game? So rather than say, well, how are we going to design our first-person shooter? You've got a brainstorming session about what the UI could look like for the first-person shooter. You've got maybe a brainstorming session for, what the fiction for this first-person shooter might be. You're dividing it into sub-problems rather than having it be this gigantic, monolith of a thing. And you can see how that would be a problem, right? Because if you just brainstorm on what's our first-person shooter going to be, you're going to get ideas about the UI, you're going to get ideas about the fiction, you're going to get ideas about what sort of guns you should use or what they should sound like, and it'll just be lots of interesting ideas, but we can all over the place. Problems should be clearly and simply articulated. I think that's what I sort of said by should be simple. Just, you know, make sure that they're articulated in a simple way. Sometimes you can have a simple problem that's not articulated particularly clearly. So it's just something to consider. Responsibilities of the leader. The first being to understand and explain the problem and the aim of the brainstorm session. I mean, a lot of times people maybe will write a memo beforehand, as the facilitator of the thing, as the person who perhaps wants to see the brainstorm be a success the most, maybe having a clear understanding of the problem and explaining that to the group is an important job for the leader. I use this term facilitating the session, encouraging ideation, discouraging criticism. You're kind of the watchguard for the process. Not necessarily, you can sometimes be a contributor and a watchdog for the process, but most importantly is that you are a watchdog for the process. You'll see as we do it, it's just so easy to kind of slip into these conversational habits that are contrary to the brainstorming process. And so having someone who's constantly like making sure, don't criticize, encouraging people like, oh, I haven't heard from this person, do you have any ideas? You know, even kind of pulling people out is important. And that comes to that ensuring that no voices are lost during the discussion, right? I mean, we had that ableist member who had 15 ideas that he wrote down, and he's like, they're worthless. Well, in some ways, it's the part of the leader, either during the session or after the session, to try to encourage, you know, those able members to contribute. It's some of the most crackpot ideas become the best ones, so you really want to make sure every voice is heard. And then encouraging the synthesis, encouraging people to kind of riff on their ideas. Trying to find ways for people to build on each other. Even offering synthesis towards a direction. So maybe you have a couple ideas, and you're like, one and ten are kind of similar. Are there any ways we can combine this? And someone's like, yeah, we could, give them a helmet. Awesome. So on and so forth. I don't know what two things you can combine to get a helmet, but can't get shot in the head. How about a helmet? All right. So, responsibilities for the secretary, most obviously record every and all ideas, like write it all down, you have to write it all down, this is so important. This one is often overlooked, monitoring the schedule and the duration of the session. Something I learned a long, long, long time ago is one of the worst things that can happen is meetings that run over, or meetings that start late, or meetings that don't adhere to a schedule. No better way to kind of lose your employees or lose your staff than to kind of bite into their time. Making sure that it's constrained and that it meets the duration is really important. So, it may seem simple, the timing's a thing. And then, of course, if applicable, participating in the brainstorming. Like I said, all voices should be heard, and that, oftentimes would mean that the secretary is a creative professional as well. And so making sure that you participate if applicable. So we've got a few exercises now to get you acclimated to the idea of brainstorming. The first one is an actual individual brainstorm. So if you have paper, grab some paper. You could use a note card too. It's really just something to write on other than the table. No cards are totally fine.
Got turned down.
As you guys are getting ready, I'll continue to talk. This is actually something that I didn't mention in the process, but what is actually very useful to the brainstorming process. I think doing warm-ups before your actual brainstorm is useful. People show up just from lunch, especially if it's one of those picnic meetings. Sometimes they're tired, people just might have other things on the brain, so getting in the habit, getting warmed up to being creative is important. I tend to find it's a rare kind of person who you just sort of give a blank piece of paper to and you're like, oh, make something! Go, be creative, and they're like, they just like whip something out. Right? You got to kind of get warmed up. Visual artists sketch constantly, and that makes sense. And then they build on sketches. I just make dumb pieces of music that I'll maybe never use for anything, but maybe I will. Who knows? I make stupid sound effects in the shower. I consider that warming up for work. So you have to kind of get warmed up. And so this is just a really quick five minute warm up. And the idea is write anything that comes to your mind for this specific problem, and I'll show you a picture. Brainstorm possible uses. It's not really brainstorm. It's more just like you individually come up with creative ideas, creative uses for the following item. And I'll give you 5 minutes starting now. All right. I think that hopefully was good for a warm-up. Quick questions, and you can just a show of hands. And be honest, this is a safe environment for us. How many of you had an idea that you did not write down? How many of you self-censored yourself with an idea? Yeah, some of you are like, oh, that's just dumb. See, it's hard to get out of the habit of doing that. It's hard to get out of this kind of this habit of self-judgment. And it's really important. That dumb idea that you think was worthless might be a good one. Does anyone who raised their hand want to share what their censored idea was? Just to exercise the demons, so to speak? No? Nothing? All right. Who wants to share some ideas that they did write down? All right, here we go.
See, I have a lot.
Yeah, well, throw us a couple that are your favorites.
See, lockpick, MacGyver, connecting circuits.
There you go.
Caring hurts. A knife, clothes hanger, chopsticks, a douser, stir, see, connect batteries, lit air of tires, emo tool, nose picker.
Sure.
Staple. A staple. And a paper weight. I have a lot of things.
Yeah, good. No, that's awesome.
Right, all right, I got, let's see, fingernail cleaner, an eyelash straightener, basically railgun ammo, a balloon annihilator, and an official Tamagotchi TM resetter.
Oh, yeah. It resets a lot of things, actually. Yeah. How about over the side? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Add cash fish with it by saying it into a book. Yeah. Scratch messages with it. Have used it as a key ring, conduct electricity with it. Maybe need a drill through. Fix umbrellas and what have you in it, which I've done before. Money clip, use it as a skewer for cooking. Put it on top of a door, and so when people open it, it falls on the ground, and you know somebody's been in your room. Lance boils, poke eyes out. Goes on hair accessory.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
The whole paper?
Yeah. I had a hairstyling accessory, projectile, something you could melt down to the formidable and pour and other stuff.
Very cool.
That's something you could bend and put on chairs when people sit down and poke them. Modern art. I thought if you could try to get a bunch of fill a dorm room with it as a prank or something. Toothpick, hold stuff open for emergency surgery.
Cool. What's other ideas?
I thought you could bend it into an interesting flat shape and then put it in ink and use it as a stamp.
Very nice. Very good. Cool. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Game bits and tokens. Holder for dipping something into liquids. Pie clips and keeping small boards together.
Very good.
Very good.
Sure, yeah.
Mini rock garden rake.
Oh.
Also a garden.
Good. Good.
Heat generator. If you work hard in it by bending it and then bending it, and then it gets hot.
Very nice.
As long as you got some break.
Yes.
I think about a souvenir as a totem for a lost rope.
Oh,
it's
good. Yeah.
Can you say that again?
A totem?
I'll just say like a... There's a robot that's made by human, but it's lost in space. They only have this thing to remind it. It's right. Become a secret thing.
Yeah. My favorite use for a paperclip is cleaning the lint out of my iPhone ear jack, which drives me absolutely nuts. So I'm running on reserve battery power, and my slideshow has been suspended.
Oh, no.
In my office, there's a part of air pocket that I have to get on. So yeah, how did we feel about that exercise? Got you loosened up a little bit, got you thinking about some ideas, got you feeling a little creative juices flowing. We've got three more exercises that we're going to do.
So much brainstorming!
This is the hardest work I've ever done in MIT! No, so we've got a few more exercises to get you guys kind of comfortable, get you guys, relaxed with this kind of brainstorming process.
The next one is going to be a group exercise. I'm going to wait to describe it until I can get my slideshow up. Does anybody else have any particularly choice paperclip ideas?
I just thought of one. A sine wave generator.
Oh, very good.
Wireframe doll.
Yeah. Don't take a lot, then.
Totally.
All right. I'm sure you are
building.
Hold
on a second.
Back up and stop looking at it as like a, if you take it apart and get it to an army man, you use it like as a spear against the zoo.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, like man versus wild, like catching fish with it or something.
Something to chew on?
Yeah.
He uses a catapult if you bend the top part.
Rubber band launcher. Letting air out of tires.
So
it
goes
into
that
explosion.
There you go.
You guys want to like see what the angle position is.
And you can do either one.
I thought it was the guy who had an oversized red paper clip and ended up trading it for a house.
Oh, yeah. Currency towards a house, yeah. Cool. So hopefully that got you loosened up. I do want to just emphasize again, for those of you who raised your hand, and even those of you who did not raise your hand because you were censoring the truth, because you're afraid, try not to self-censor. Really, it's important to brainstorming. Stop self-centering. I bet those crappy ideas that you didn't write down are actually really awesome. So, activity number two, we're going to work as one large group. This is our conch shell. Doesn't look like one, I know, but the principle still applies. This is just to kind of get us in the habit, in the shape of kind of speaking one at a time. Not interrupting each other. And in some senses, building on each other's ideas, too, right? There's something in the physical kind of passing of the ball after you've heard someone's idea that might encourage that sort of synthesis of ideas as you're going. I will be your fearless leader. All that means is I just kind of make sure you're not interrupting each other. And we're going to brainstorm solutions to a design problem. This one, I think, is actually a lot of fun. I will show you the design problem, I will maybe throw out an idea, and then I will toss the conch shell to the first person who wants it. And then it doesn't have to come back to me, just anyone who wants it, throw up your hand, and we'll kind of keep moving around. Please close the lids on your drinks. put away your crystal stuff if you don't want to shatter. So we will take approximately 15 minutes on this. We'll see how our momentum goes. So you just finished updating Tetris for Xbox Live Arcade. Awesome. I don't know how you got the rights, but that's great. Microsoft is demanding a set of achievements for integrating the game into their online service, because unless you have achievements, it's not a real game. So we are going to brainstorm possible player achievements for your new version of Tetris. You know what achievements are, right? Those little things that pop up on your Xbox every time you do anything. So that is our idea for Tetris achievements. And I'll start. How about for actually getting four lines? You get a Tetris achievement. What's your next?
You get an achievement for losing as quickly as possible, which I think would just be like
very good.
Getting three lines with an S piece.
Ooh.
Drawing some sort of unique little picture with the Tetris blocks, like something new, perhaps.
Putting one of each block down.
Lasting for a certain amount of time without ever getting above a certain height.
Lasting a certain amount of time without ever making a piece.
Modern Tetris games have a system where you can rotate indefinitely when your piece is down. So you rotate indefinitely for a minute or two or 3 minutes.
Lasting a certain amount of time without ever clearing a line with a straight piece.
Putting your piece down underneath another piece into a little hole.
Sliding.
The
T-spin.
There you go. Spelling USSR with your pieces. That was a bad throw.
Making like a conglomeration of all pieces into like the shape of a regular piece. So, like, the whole board is like
basically only moving the pieces in beat to the music that's playing.
Spelling USA with your pieces. I don't know if it's possible, but doing it.
High score and high score without clearing lines.
Managing to clear the entire board in a game that has already reached the top line, but not quite.
Sure.
Yeah. Putting the piece down without actually looking at the piece at all.
Most pieces per time.
One day of continuous Tetris play.
Marathon challenge.
Breaking the previous high score.
Only ever shifting pieces either to right or to the left for the entire game.
Doing the marathon challenge, but only listening to one piece of music the entire time. The same piece.
Clearing a level by dropping pieces before they fall five spaces.
Oh. All right, cool.
Rotating every single piece that you play.
Oh, very good.
Never going above a certain line for a certain amount of time.
Ooh. Sustaining effort. All of the above, but on different difficulty levels.
Somebody a lot of ideas.
Describe it.
Clearing three lines of the T.
Oh, there you go, sure. Starting up the game. clearing the entire screen.
Using the L block. Doesn't matter how.
So some of the blocks are different colors, so including, you know, lines always the same color. The blocks.
Rotating a piece 720 degrees.
Only matching pieces such that the new blocks that fall down are touching blocks of the same color.
Clear 2 4 block segments with 2 consecutive lines.
Clearing a level using only Tetrises.
Sorry, you can't talk anymore.
Challenging somebody on your friends list to beat the score.
Fighting against someone on your friends list to lose faster.
Having no holes in the block for a certain amount of time.
Oh,
okay. Inviting a friend on one of your Xbox Live friends to play with you.
5 consecutive line clears.
Beating one of your friends on Xbox Live when you play with them.
Losing to a friend on Xbox Live.
Playing with a friend for 1 hour. Just 1 day.
Beating a score set by the original creator of Tetris.
Clearing a line somewhere above the first line, and the first line only has 1 block filled in.
I think it's possible. It definitely is.
You can have like the flat ones. Someone's gonna have ideas. There's an idea.
Lose more than 10 levels from friend, but then bigger.
Play the original creator of Tetris on Xbox Live.
Losing 100 times.
Yeah, there you go.
Playing on increasingly ridiculous difficulties with achievements for each. Or speeds.
Yeah.
Increasing the speeds.
Completing a Tetris challenge, which is presumably some kind of thing where you have to drop the blocks in the right sequence in order to clear all the lines.
Yeah.
Clearing 1,000 lines.
Playing invisible mode.
Playing for a certain amount of time while holding down the down key continuously.
I don't know if you did, only rotating in one direction, always. I don't know if someone said that already. Getting 10 achievements in Tetris.
Yeah.
getting every achievement in
Tetris. Oh no, how can you get it?
It's a paradox. It's impossible.
Always having blocks on the far left and on the far right column.
Cool. I think that had some decent momentum. But you know, I think like our mission was accomplished, right? Like we were really only giving one idea at a time because it was only the person who had the ball who was talking. That, you know, probably with a little bit more speed and momentum, but it was nice. Like we did have a little building on ideas. You know, we're starting to get this kind of brainstorm. There was still some shyness, which is, you know, people have different personalities, but stop being shy. You're allowed to have your different personality, but stop it. No. So that's activity number two. Any questions about that process? How do you feel about it? Any thoughts on it before we go on to the next activity? All right. Next activity. Actually, this is our last activity. Sorry, I said there were four, but there's only three. Number four. Okay. So this one is a more formal brainstorm. And actually, I screwed up that last one. We didn't have a secretary, so all of those great Tetris ideas are now lost. I can't remember any.
Yes.
Hey. Yes. Did we not have that in the 1950s or something? Let me just get these wax orders. Yeah. what we're going to do is we're going to separate into two design teams. So it'll just totally be by location. We'll just kind of get half of you over here and half of you over there. I want the team to designate one leader. That's going to be the person who's responsible. Clerk. For facilitating it. Oh, did I say clerk there? A leader and a secretary. It's supposed to be a clerk, leader, and a secretary. So one person to write everything down, one person to obviously facilitate. And we're going to do a kind of a 20 or so minute brainstorm for a game pitch. What do I mean by game pitch? It's kind of think of the you're in an elevator with Miyamoto, or you're in an elevator with, you know, Philip Kahn, and you have this game idea that you need to pitch. But you're only going to the 10th floor or so. And so really, you've got like 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes to kind of get the core information about this game out. So that can be something like a title, maybe a tagline for it, any main features you might have for it. Of course, it would be way too easy or way actually crazy for me to be like, any game at all, because there's lots of different types of games, obviously. So it's going to be a game based on the following constraints. So what I'd like to do first, before I give you the constraint, is let's divide ourselves in half. We can kind of draw this like imaginary line diagonally, dividing the two of you back there, and we'll just get one half here, one half over here. And once I give you the constraint, we'll actually find a separate room for the other team, for one of the teams.
Yeah, you're stuck on the little wire. That's an achievement right there.
Sorry. So
I always think that when I'm watching
the other
thing, I always think like something happens. Especially when someone goes on the say, oh, those are the best. You just have an achievement. You watch this movie.
If someone has a piece of paper, they can tap down there. Right. Yeah, just write out a piece of paper. So these are your teams. You guys will go into that room. You guys stay out here. As soon as I give you the constraint, designate a clerk / leader, a fearless leader, and a secretary, someone to write everything down. Because our groups are relatively small, right, we can have the leader and the secretary involved in the brainstorming process. Please don't be afraid of contributing. But if you are designated as this leader, keep in mind your primary responsibility is facilitating the brainstorm. You want to make sure it runs smoothly, you want to make sure people are not criticizing ideas, you want to make sure that it's going okay. Any questions on this before I give you your constraints? Everything make sense? All good? Okay. Here are the constraints for the game. It must have zombies, it must have a love story, it must be massively multiplayer. Those are the constraints for your game. That's what the publisher's going to give you money for. So you need to develop a pitch for this game idea. Title, tagline, what have you. All right, so you guys, we'll take you in this room over here. You guys stay here, designate a leader and a secretary, and then start brainstorming. Oh, I love this. It's like, I don't want to be the leader. I don't want to be the secretary.
I said I'll do it.
What about the secretary?
Wait, he wanted to be the secretary.
Oh, you're secretary.
Oh, wait, I want to be secretary.
One of you is secretary, one is youth leader. So you're the leader then.
All right.
Because you're sitting in those game again and you lost.
Oh. Wow. All
brings up the age-old question: if they're both vampires or they're both zombies, does it count as necrophilia?
But let's see.
Fighting zombies manages to have.
Encompass all of those except the massively multiplayer part.
Right. Nazi zombies.
Licensed title right there.
Yes.
So.
Make it Nazi zombies. Two Nazi zombies. No, a forbidden love. A Nazi zombie is in love with like an allied zombie. And
Jewish.
Yes. And then it's. So there's two factions. It could be. Well, they're all people, like online. One group. There's like two factions. There's the ally group and the Axis group.
What if
so they're all Nazis?
What if there's two factions? There's the zombies and the humans, and they're drawn into war because there's a love story between a zombie and a human, and the leaders get pissed over this, and so we're in war because of like Romeo and Juliet esque zombie human.
So what you're saying is we're having intelligent zombies.
Yeah, intelligent zombies.
So well, clearly they're not
semi-intelligent. Semi-intelligent zombies.
The zombies should decide to become Nazis. We have to somehow bring Hitler into this, though. Just because it's Nazis, there must be a zombie Hitler.
Who said this?
Wait, what is your name? This is a body brain.
What is your name?
What is your name?
Jason.
I'm Brian. On Jason's idea of is it necrophilia, I think because it's a love story, the title could be necrophilia question mark.
Is it necrophilia?
Is it necrophilia?
Is it necrophilia?
Probably.
Is it necrophilia? I like it as a title.
You say it's a love story, but is it a sex story?
So, wait, how about this? Or maybe
even zombie strippers that fall in love with.
Have you seen Zombie Strippers?
No.
It's a terrible, wonderful, terrible movie.
Well, I'll watch it then.
You should. Not nah, should.
How about we have the zombies as the good guys? That way, like, the allies are trying to, like, make a weapon that will destroy, like, half the world, and the zombies are like, no, that would be bad. Let's make everyone else zombie so they agree with us.
What if
you're just a zombie and everyone is trying to kill you, so you want to make everyone zombie so the world will be peaceful and happy?
You want everyone to love you.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
And that's maybe
and then
trying to open
story.
Minds.
Oh, yes.
Even better, love zombies. Like, who says they have to be undead? They can be infected by emotion. That's a tagline right there.
Infected by emotion.
Nudist zombies.
What if like 95% of the world is zombie, and so then the weird creatures that are like scary are the humans, and they're like sentient, they do weird things, but the zombies all are happy and love each other.
Maybe the humans have the love disease.
They're trying to hump zombies.
like they're infecting zombies with love.
So then each person would be either start as a zombie or a human, and they have to complete a bunch of little tasks before they can come, you know, and they have to like play challenges against each other, so it'd be like zombie against zombie, and one of them's infected, one of them isn't.
So humans can infect zombies with love. That makes them not zombies?
What if there's a dynamic between so there's two factions, zombies and humans, and every player is given a match, and in this massive multiplayer world, that one of their main objectives is to find their match who's in the opposing faction and buried deep among hostile hordes of either humans or zombies, find them and like live happily ever after together.
And become either zombies or humans together.
Correct.
But love zombies.
Find a cure or just get bitten.
And become love zombies.
Love zombies.
Love zombies.
Is it the question? Is there truly a difference between being in love and being undead?
that's a great tagline. Maybe some task here.
What do you think more blind? Having your eyes gouged out by a zombie or being in love?
So then we can draw it into the actual Nazi zombie game. Maybe the Nazi zombies from the other point of view. So they're just trying to have love and the humans are trying to kill them.
Are we having Nazis?
I don't know. We can.
Some of the ideas can include Nazis and some can't, and we can decide later.
Should we be getting to the point of judgment towards the end of the thing so we can finalize a pitch and a thing or whatever? Or just come up?
We're just brainstorming? Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah.
How about the player is a human fighting against the zombies, and you have some kind of companion, may or may not be a cube, but that accompanies you on your journey to defeat the zombies.
So a companion cube. I like companion cube better.
That
is a heart. Like, that's like a love story between you and your cube.
But can the cube become a zombie?
Yes.
I mean, it could be a person like Left 4 Dead. Like four people against all the zombies, and they're all
spiders and stuff. Or witches. Maybe you're trying to get. The love story is you and the witch. Because, I mean, the thing, I'm like,
what if. So, all players play zombies, and most missions are stuff like you have to infect a city and you just run around, like, binding people into the entire city that you've, like, conquered and turned to zombify. But your ultimate goal is that your girlfriend from back when you were human or your boyfriend from back when you were human is at some place, and you want to infect all cities until you can get there and then infect her so that you guys can live happily ever after.
You could also. Also, building on the idea of being zombies trying to attack cities, you are zombies with Cupid's love arrows, trying to infect the entire city with love. At which point, no productivity is all gone in the city.
Zombies with love arrows infecting people?
What? It could be set in the 1950s where everyone's like trying to be productive and not love each other. Yeah.
No, what if you build along the lines of, you know, having to infect the city, but you have to do one zombie can't infect an entire city, right? So you have to, like, ally with other zombies, but they're like different factions of zombies, kind of like two zombie mob families, right? They're trying to infect. They have two different, you know, varieties of this love gene, and they have to infect the city with their.
Oh wait, could it be like a drug trade? So like. Like they have to infect people with like a certain drug, so there's like a drug war as well, and the three swords, because swords are cool.
What if when you have a zombie virus, instead of wanting to eat people, you are overcome with an urge to passionately make out with them, and if you make out with somebody, then they turn into a love zombie too, and so there's no like decomposition going on so much as there is like hordes of people running through streets trying to passionately make out with each other.
Wait, you're talking about like
being decaying, like decrepit love zombies suddenly become very attractive.
So yeah. So wait, and they start taking care of their appearance and stuff.
So where does regard limit? Is there? After the zombies make out, what's next?
We make it read them.
Okay.
So what if we just make a World of Warcraft type of MMO, but every player play a human, you have a zombie companion.
Pet zombie.
Yeah, like
pet. You have to raise your zombie from
like
little
Pokemon with zombies.
No, but they had a pet as a pet.
I think it's called Fido.
It's like, I think.
There's a movie called Fido.
No, it's not
Fido.
That one.
Oh, I've not seen it, but I've seen a trailer.
So what if you have to fight, like, with Pokemon zombies? Different power-ups.
Ooh, different.
I like that.
Different kinds of zombies, like in Left 4 Dead. There's, you know, the big fat and the ones that like vomit and, you know.
Spitters. I hate spitters. But smokers. Smokers are the worst.
Well, instead of power-ups, you have love potions.
Man, somebody said smokers are the worst. That sounds like a dating site.
So I like the Pokemon idea. So you can have instead of like you're humans, but you just have to capture all the different types of zombies. And then you fight other people with their zombies, and it's like match for zombie versus zombie.
What if the love story is not for the player, but is in the story of the game, in that the reason that you're waging war at the moment is because you're trying to steal a cure to zombieism because your fearless leader, 20 ranks up, your president or whatever's girlfriend has been zombified, or his wife has been zombified. And so the whole game, you're all the means in a quest to try to find this cure, but you don't realize that you're not trying to find a cure for, it's not for like your use or your girlfriend's use or whatever, or people that you love, it's for your leaders.
And what if she is actually the leader of the zombies? And
oh crap. What if the zombies are aliens?
Zombie aliens.
The Flood.
What if the zombies are ninjas?
Yes.
You can combine Pokemon love zombie idea with like The Sims, where you like have a zombie that's under your control and you're trying to like teach your zombie to love, and like maybe you're a different avatar, you're like a human avatar, and you go through quests where you like take your zombie places and teach your zombie things
and not to bite people and
yeah, exactly. Like I don't know, train your zombie.
Maybe have so with the whole thing with the ninja zombies, why not have pirates as well? Pirate zombies, maybe.
What kind of robot?
Pirate
zombies.
Versus ninja zombies.
Zombie edition. Special edition.
In space, wrapped in bacon.
Yes.
Time-traveling zombies.
I would love... I mean, it'd be a great game to make, just like pirate zombies versus ninja zombies in space, wrapped in bacon, and just make that game. It'd be great.
Bacon zombies.
So, is a necrophilia? Probably. Pirate edition. Ninja.
So, maybe we should divide it into little sub brainstorms for like the name tagline and all that. Do we, as a name, do we have any more brainstorming?
I think we should figure out like a mechanic that works. So far, we have a lot of ideas about like what the game world is. We have no idea like how you play the game.
So maybe more brainstorming on that then.
Yeah,
Pokemon. Who's the player? It's massive multiplayer. So.
One's working, such as typical WoW style RPG, typical massive multiplayer FPS. Pokemon style RPG.
Pokemon
seem like they
Pokemon FPS.
Or as we were saying before, it could be like The Sims Online. Cool.
The Sims Online is so good.
Yeah.
Did you play as a Pokemon?
Yeah, maybe you play as a Pokemon, but it's a first person shooter.
But it's probably a, more like a, okay.
But then you still have like an RPG first person shooter as Pokemon.
Wait. So you're gonna make like a dance.
That's lightning.
It could be entirely intense.
That's like easiest.
Wait, you have to fight. You have battles with birds like Monkey Island.
I like that text-based zombie love.
Text-based zombie love.
And then it takes this really, really, really long tongue down your throat.
Zombie make-out scene. Well,
son of a title.
So it's massively multiplayer. What if you randomly get paired with five other players who are playing this game, and you all have some kind of task you have to complete, and you're given these particular zombie Pokemon that you can use to complete this particular task.
Wait, we have zombie pokeballs?
What?
We have a title.
So, necrophilia with F-E-E-L.
The first zombie sex game. It'll do
exactly.
Oh,
no. So what if,
wait, if it's going to be popular in Japan, you have to have tentacles somewhere.
What if you are a zombie? And all the players are zombies, and the NPCs are the humans, and you, like, try to go on quests to make yourself more attractive and, like, learn human customs, and you get points for, like, seducing humans.
Yes!
Yeah. You have to make sure your brain's meter doesn't get too low, though.
So you have to eat them at the same time.
You have to seduce them and then eat them.
Yes.
And then if you, like, eat them with certain... You eat the ones you don't want to. Yeah.
That actually sounds like a fun vampire game. I'm going to put that out there. You're a vampire. You have to seduce a human female to bring back to drink.
It's like prototypes.
Yeah. Or you have to seduce a human animal. Because you want to seduce a human, but at the same time you have to eat humans, so you have to hide the fact you're eating humans from the human you're trying to seduce.
I see. So you have a human girlfriend, and then like you eat other humans. And
like while she's not looking.
Oh, God, that's
true.
Have you been eating other girlfriends without me? Where's my stepdad? About that.
Oh, that's who that guy was? I thought he was the
Wait.
Delivery guy.
Let's see. Zombies meets American Psycho. You've never seen American Psycho? Oh.
Psycho?
He goes around killing random people, but he has a girlfriend on the side. I bet he's crazy. It's fun.
Sounds like Psycho?
But, wait, better.
Do the tagline.
So necrophilia.
Get infected with emotion.
Necrophilia, infected with love. Brains, love.
Life after
it's a perfect movie. It's a perfect game.
All right, guys. I'm gonna have you stop. We're gonna bring the other two.
Love after life.
I like it.
That's really good.
I think that was productive.
That was good. All right, guys, so...
Our publisher's going to give us so much money.
it may seem kind of odd to have you guys do this brainstorming, then what I actually want to talk about is rather than the ideas that you came up with, because I'm sure they're all really good. I know, so sad. But what really matters is the process, right? Because the point of brainstorming is to withhold judgment. Judging which of your ideas is best shouldn't have even been happening at this stage. And so, you know, one kind of question, you know, we'll come back to what went well, but what sort of stumbling blocks did you guys run into in this process as you were doing it? Did it all go perfectly, or how did it go? So what sort of things were happening?
I was going to say, like, we were trying to design this whole game, so sometimes we say features, and then we would push into different games with different versions of different things.
Yeah.
So it might have been
Yeah, in some senses, it may have been constrained in one area, right? Yeah, sure, zombies and a love story, but then it was like asking for a whole lot, and so it could have been, can we just brainstorm a title, or can we just brainstorm this, or can we just brainstorm that? What about you?
We very briefly got sidetracked on Pokemon.
I think it was zombies.
I don't know, for a second we got like, it was like Pokemon only, Pokemon first-person shooter. And that was like 45 seconds.
Any other thoughts? I mean, it could be about the whole group. It could be about like your own difficulty you had personally. Whether you had any challenges with, like, you know.
So I feel like if somebody says a really good idea, then everyone's kind of stuck on that idea, and you have to kind of get through that whole idea before any other ideas can come out.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. We just haven't thought about, like, what other kind of noise are there out there?
Yeah.
So I had them like get to come in like a few other ones.
Yeah.
So like get that spot and brainstorming.
I thought, as described, kind of hard to like jump in and talk about your ideas because so busy frantically writing down everyone else's.
Yeah, it's really hard. And when a brainstorm of you guys, actually, I mean both groups, but I stopped in with you guys. And you guys had this interesting kind of momentum going, and I was watching you try to write it all down. it was way hard, like because like ideas were coming in like as you were finishing the last idea. So it is, you know, if a group has really good momentum, it's I really like the idea of having two people where each person's writing every other one. Of course, the difficulty is that you kind of pull two people out of contributing, right? So it's, you know, the organization of the actual group is kind of important.
Do you ever recommend using like a tape recorder like we're doing for this class?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly makes sense. One of the things that, you know, one of the things that Osborne says, which I think
you
is...
You can't put a tape recorder down. Remember that.
Yeah, but he also says, like, it's one of the most important things for the Secretary Scribe is to number things. So that you know how many you have. I'm sort of like, is that just to support your work? Like, is that going to be like, good luck, you know? We came up with 110 ideas. That's amazing, you know? It's like, how many doesn't seem to matter as much as the quality of the ideas. So I thought it was weird that he said that. But, yeah, I mean, tape recording, video recording, any way of documenting the process, I think, is the most important part. And actually, you know, he does make a good point of saying, you know, one of the problems with brainstorming as it kind of evolves from when he first introduced it in this one place and when people started kind of running with it without thinking about the principles, is they would brainstorm, and then that was sort of it. And it was like, you really have to kind of look back at what you've come up with. It's really important to kind of reflect on what you've done as a second step. You know, and so that's kind of important too. How about the judgment thing? Was there, I mean, people, I didn't notice a whole lot of like criticism, though, like I don't think any of it was really good. Everybody was like, oh, that's a terrible idea. But did you find it hard to not pass judgment on ideas as they were coming out, even your own?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely let more than one, like, ha, I like that, slips. You know, I was like, oh, that's good.
Generally, that's okay. I mean, like, you know, it's you know, what you want to avoid is like the, oh my God, we've got to do this one. You know, like that will derail everything because then it's like, you know, just the loud voice that proclaims that we're done because we got the idea will derail things. But, you know, nothing encourages a person who's shy more than feeling like their idea actually was good or meritorious. And so, yeah, you know, that sort of stuff is fine. You know, you want to avoid the stop the process.
I think I did say at some point, like, ah, we've got our title, which is probably not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a hard thing to kind of train yourself from doing.
Come on, is it necrophilia? It's a great title.
How many self-censorers still out there where a lot of people thought of ideas but then just didn't contribute? Good if you didn't. It's great. I mean, it's great if everybody felt like kind of agreed to it. Cool. That's really good. That's really good. So, so I would say that's one thing that went well. What other things went well for you guys?
The tagline.
Yeah. Specifically, just coming up with taglines.
Well, just
infected by love.
Oh, no, wait. Love after life.
Love after life.
That's cool. I mean, did you guys feel like you had momentum? It seemed to me, watching, that there was momentum building. That it was.
Did a really good job of taking a lot of different ideas that we had and started synthesizing them into different things. We said, oh, that idea would work well if we did this. Oh, and then we could use like that name and that would fit there.
Yeah. Who are the two leaders for the two groups? The clicks? Did you guys feel like you had to do much facilitating?
Not really. So the hard part is really just at the beginning where it's like, how do we want to just approach this thing? Mm-hmm. And so I guess we decided to start with the title or like, it was either the titles or the main features. Mm-hmm. And we were just like, all right, let's just put a whole bunch of random titles and see if we can go from there.
Sure, yeah. That would be
for
forgot I was the lead.
I mean, somebody
I didn't lead anything.
No, somebody got to do it. If you don't have a whole lot of facilitating to do, it generally means that the group is running okay. I do think you have a good point. A lot of the facilitator's work comes at the beginning of the process or even before the process even began, making sure the constraints are clear and that you guys know what you're going to be working on. Okay, so bringing this back to this is a game design class, right? I mean, I sort of touched on it early, but, you know, how do you guys see this being a useful kind of mechanic or a useful tool in, you know what? It's funny, I call it a mechanic. Did any of you catch that paragraph in Alex's one where the guy was saying, when my team feels like they're playing, it's a way more productive brainstorm than when not? And I thought that was really interesting, right? Because, like, there are elements of gaminess to this, which I think is kind of interesting. So, you know, how do you guys think this could improve, you know, the general game design process?
I feel like after you have a game and you're testing it, and there's, like, a major flaw that, you know, it's taking too long or something like that, and everyone sits down and brainstorms, like, okay, this is exactly what our problem is.
Yeah, kind of overcoming roadblocks. Yeah, sure.
Never to come up with half the cool ideas that we came up with, Phil Martin. Process. And just me thinking alone never to come up with, like, Pokemon
sure.
zombies.
Sure. Anyone else?
Well, this is good, just in general, Mick, to just think up a game, because maybe it's like, oh, every single game has been decided. People have made games of all types. How am I going to make a unique game? It's brainstorm. It's like, those two things, I've never seen that before. That could be interesting.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, actually. The synthesis thing is actually, I think, something that's really important, right? Because we tend to see a lot of recycled mechanics, and what becomes an interesting thing in a game oftentimes is not that it's a completely new rule, right? It's the way that rule interacts with the other rules in the system. In some instances also how that rule is read and interpreted by the player, or perhaps intended to be read and interpreted by the player. So, I think the synthesis is actually an interesting part of it, where people can bring a lot of different ideas from a lot of different experiences with games to kind of fuse ideas together.
When it comes to coming up with ideas for games, the nice thing about brainstorming is that it gets past the good idea that everyone happens to like, which is a problem that we sometimes have as far as this. You know, people will find one idea that they like and they will never think past it. That's because they were happy to find one that everybody agreed.
Yeah, and so you guys are dividing into design teams, and one of the things that I would encourage, I don't know how it's set up schedule-wise, but try to divide the brainstorming process from the judgment, you know, like I kind of said. It's true, like even if you do the brainstorm, it can help you get over, but a lot of times whatever had momentum during that brainstorm or whatever got the most yucks during that brainstorm, right, is going to be like the popular strong idea. And then when you come back to it with a little space, you might be like, oh, you know, like, yeah, that is a really good idea, but there was this other thing that got mentioned like a half an hour earlier that's really interesting. Maybe we can incorporate that sometime. And so kind of, you know, making the judgment happen in a separate phase can be really important. Because it's true, creativity is like this, it's a little bit more organic. It's not necessarily a strictly logical process, right? So applying logic later can be a good thing, I think, to the creative process. Cool. Any questions about brainstorming at all? You are incredibly enlightened by Alex Osborne.
There were a couple of principles on the forum, actually, after people had done the reading about using things like Google Wave or Google Docs, where things are automatically recorded because everyone's basically typing in their ideas and it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I don't have a whole lot of experience with, I don't have a lot of experience with remote brainstorming, but I did have so one of the games I worked on this summer was this game called Yet One Word, where you were asked a lot of personal questions. And so we had to think of personal questions. So we were like, well, if you have ideas, write it down to Google Doc. And at one point, myself and two of the other designers were all in the Google Doc at the same time. And you could actually see that sort of brainstorming momentum happen. Someone would type something in, and then like someone would type next to it, like, oh, that's so funny. And then like write an idea that's related to that, right? And you're kind of seeing it happen in this digital space. So I think it can, and we've gotten so accustomed to having these kind of digital personalities, right? And these digital personas in IMing and text messaging and all that other stuff, that I think we've gotten pretty adept at typing fast enough to get ideas out, that I think it could totally work. There is something to be said for like the momentum that gets generated in person. But yeah, I mean,
incredible, please.
Yeah, I mean, it was so funny. I was going to say like, no, that's a terrible idea. You have to be around each other. And I was like, actually, it worked. I mean, I think it all depends a little bit on the personalities of people that were involved. But, certainly for a prolonged brainstorm, you know, one of the things Alex Osborne says is like, time box it. So if you don't time box it, it's going to be a problem. I think for in person, that's true. You know, it's so easy to get onto a Google document now whenever you have an idea that actually having kind of a long form brainstorm where anytime someone has an idea over a week or something like that, write it down. You know, that's also useful too, because then you know you separated the process of collecting and then but you still should do that, so building on ideas.
It's probably easier to do the synthesis with at least simultaneously online or in the same room.
Yeah. And to see the ideas come out as they come out. Yeah, it's kind of, it's a little uncommon to just read something and be like, oh yeah, what about this? When it first shows up, when it first kind of comes into existence as you're trying to think of things, that can spur ideas, you know.
The other danger about doing it like, okay, this document's open for the next 24 hours, everyone throw your ideas in, is that then people start spending too long on any one idea.
Yeah.
Thinking about what they're going to write down before they write it down.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's not the point.
Think of the paperclip experience, and those of you that raised your hand for saying that you were self-censoring, on your own, like, you didn't even have to, I wasn't going to make you all hand in those paperclip ideas and you were self-censoring, right? So yeah, the same sort of thing applies, like you might censor yourself or spend a long time. Yeah, any other thoughts, questions? Cool. Well, I hope this was helpful. I hope it'll be helpful for your game design stuff. Email me if you do have any questions about this stuff. I mean, I can try to help out. But other than that, good luck on your game design for this class and for the rest of the semester. So, cool. I do like this on the keynote things. It says end of show.
Let's see now. We're gonna play some card games, but before that, just a little bit of admin. On Monday, you'll notice that we had two readings, one of which you've already done. So just know that. This is the other reading. It's a little bit dry. Tough it out. Caffeinate yourself before reading it. Tough it out. It is worth it. It's a translation, so it's. Let's see now. There's at least one person, I think, who hasn't filled out the form that we need to fill out. So just come up here and get filled out. We've got four games up today?
Yeah, at least four that we want to really get through, and there's some more time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we have enough time everywhere to get through all of them, but most of them are pretty short. A lot of them, the delay is going to be set up, which is why they couldn't announce first, because that takes a lot of setup. That being said, if you do get a chance to look at the rules and study the cards, even though it was a game I couldn't announce, we've done a bunch of really smart things on the cards just to make it easier for you to set up, and you want to be kind of paying attention to that. But the aim of the game today is pretty much just variety. We have four fairly different kinds of games that use cards in a very different kind of way. And if you don't get a chance to necessarily play all of them, at least get a chance to look at other people playing them. And if you want to like check them out in the middle of the week or something, just we'll take it out of the office, but you know, arrange your time to come back here next week or something and have a chance to play them. But that's basically it. If we can just keep, if we can clear the tables, we can definitely get the cards.